is that in systems, and we have systems when we are dealing with security because we have different actors, different components, and so on, there are something that we call boundaries, and they are important because they divide the problem in a way that it's difficult to see beyond where you are. A boundary is, in a sense, something that closes, that makes a, creates a barrier, creates some hindrance, some difficulty in seeing across. And these boundaries have, among other things, the property that they make it difficult to see the unintended consequences of the actions or the interventions that you take. So, in a sense, it makes it difficult when you make the take decisions to see if there are negative consequences that you didn't want as unintended. And then we will see some examples of these types of archetypes and go over to some projecting exercises that let you experiment with that. So, the nice thing about the system archetypes is they can be quickly done. So, if you are a modeler and you want to sell something to a company, then you can say, okay, here it is, I can make you some archetypes that will cost you only that much. And that's a nice way to begin. You can get the customer interested and then continue going to the depths. They are actually system dynamics models, so this is the causal loop diagrams. They are qualitative, so they are causal loop diagrams. So why we call them archetypes will become clear in a moment. You use them to conceptualize problems, that is, to translate ideas to some models in a simple way. Yeah, you can use them to for discussions. When you have some problem that you don't really grasp, so you can start catching things and use them to communicate with the client, with the audience, so as to make progress in that. You can use them to communicate insights that you have achieved through more complex models. But you must be aware that system archetypes, they are so simple that in a sense they are wrong. I put it that in quotation marks. Because in reality, any model that you create is wrong in the sense that it is not identical to security, to reality. Let me give you an example. Suppose I say to you, create a model of this room, of this auditorium. First of all, you will probably be puzzled as to what I am asking to do. And the point is that when you want a model, remember, a model is not reality. It is something that helps us to deal with reality. Then you have to ask for what? The model for what? What is the purpose of the model? And I tell you, okay, this is an old room. It's not quite so old, but suppose it is. I would like to improve it. You see, there are some blemishes there. Also, it is not very practical in source. I want to redesign this room. Okay, then I look in for solutions in terms of how to put these arrangements together, the technology, the seats, and so on. So the model is about how to improve the model, the room, as a practical room for lectures. But suppose I said it's a model for safety. Suppose there is some fire here in the building. So I want you to create a model. And then that's a different thing. Then you ask also how to make sure that you can get out, even if some if the fire is here, that you can get out somewhere else, so you need some other escape. It's about how to report that something is going on, that you can get assistance, and so on and so on. So in that model, you will focus on different things. So when you make such models, you are making a selection of the room. You are not putting everything in that. When you are thinking of a model for evacuation purposes, then you don't need to consider that there is a clock in the wall. But if you are thinking of a model for teaching, then if the students get impatient, they would like to know how late it is. This guy is holding a boring lecture and I'm sitting here. So you have a look at a clock. That's the point with that. Or is it time now for a break? Perhaps this guy has forgotten the break and so on. Whatever. So the purpose of the model determines what you have to consider and what you don't consider. And what is not important for the problem, you leave it away. So in that sense, when you are doing systematize, the model is wrong in the sense that it is a simplification of reality. But the point is not that. The point is some models are more wrong than others. And what you want is to make the model less wrong or more adequate. So how do we do that? When it comes to archetypes, the idea is the following. There are a number of issues that come all the time. They are kind of generic. And when we are dealing with these models, we want to understand what happens over time with the problem. So archetypes, they contain the causal structure, the causes and effects that create some typical behavior over time that we see in many, many, many different situations. And what is in there is, they are the actions, that is what you do to solve the problem, actions or interventions. The reactions, what happens when you do that. In particular, the unintended reactions, the unintended consequences. And remember, this is very, very important that we recognize. In most cases, when you take some actions, you are not only achieving what you want, you are also eliciting some changes that you don't want, and you have to pay attention to that. The other thing that is important is to recognize delays. Recognize that some things take time. If you are not aware of this, you think perhaps that's all I have seen, problem is solved, but the delays can come much later, and typically with unintended consequences. The other thing is, because we are dealing with structures that you see in many, many different areas, and they are similar in a sense, you are having the possibility to transfer understanding from one domain to another one. So if you understand this in security, maybe you can use that also to understand some other kinds of problems. So we say that these archetypes, they are like shape, and that is what isomorphic means. Isomorphic is the technical term for having the same shape. And because there are things that come across in many different disciplines, they give you strong power to translate insights. These archetypes became very, very popular when a professor in MIT, his name is Peter Singer, wrote a book, The Fifth Discipline, in 1990. And at that time, one wasn't aware that actually archetypes are only of four types. So if you pay attention and do how you draw them, you can show there are only four possible types. So in Peter Singer's book, you can see archetypes with very colorful names. Limits to growth, shifting the burden, eroding goals, escalation, arms race, success to the successful, fixes that fail, the tragedy of the commons, growth and the investment and so on. But we will see soon that they are only four. Let me give you a story that shows you how unintended effects occur. In several cities in the world, big cities, where you have a lot of pollution that comes from cars, and you always, I'm sure you know some cities like that, politicians try to solve the problem by restricting the number of the cars. And for instance, this happens in Athens in Greece, and the same thing happened in Mexico City. And the idea was, there's a lot of pollution, it's too much traffic, how can we reduce pollution? We want the people to drive less cars, to take more public transport. And the introducing idea based on the color of the car. So everybody has some car with some color. They are easy to recognize. So they say on Mondays, it is not allowed for red cars to drive. If they do, then they will be fined by the police. And say on Tuesdays, no green cars. Wednesdays, no yellow cars, and so on. For the 5 work days from Monday to Friday. And what the politicians expected is, since their colors are approximately equally distributed, they expected 20% reduction in traffic and 20% reduction in pollution. What happened? Now I ask you, what happened? How would you expect? It led indeed to more pollution, and the reason why it led to more pollution, and that was unintended, is the following. To begin with, it seemed to work, but people discovered that the public transport was not so effective or not so convenient. After all, people combined the driving with perhaps driving the kids to the school, and then when they come back from work to buy in the supermarket and so on. So what people did was, many people, is they bought a used car, and they had two cars. But they bought with a different color. But if you have a car that you use permanently, you need the other one for 1 day, so you don't pay a lot. So they just bought wrecks, old cars, that otherwise would have been taken out of traffic. And now you have two cars, and you have an old car that was polluting. So as a consequence of this, people use their old car in the days where they were not allowed to use the new car with the wrong color, but that increased pollution because they were old cars. But also because having two cars and families tend to have more members, then it could happen that both cars were used at the same time. Especially if you had daughters and sons of a certain age and they wanted to get out, so they will say, Dad, may I borrow the car? And then you have the weekend and so on. So the unintended consequence of restricting the traffic was increasing the traffic and increasing pollution. But this happened not immediately, but with some delay. Now, you could have drawn a diagram to show that what will happen if the politicians in Mexico have engaged somebody with ideas of putting models, then I will say to them something like this. That's what you want to achieve. You have some pollution. And you want some desired pollution. Which should be less. And what you do is you introduce some rationing. And that influences this and this. In order to create the rationing, you have to reduce the number of the cars. So rationing will influence this in minor sense. But the reasoning will force people also to the car needs, so transport needs, or the car needs, or how you call these transport needs, they are not well solved. And that will lead to new cars, and they will increase pollution and so on. So I will draw a diagram like this, continuing until I have the full diagram. And then I will show, and so on. It takes some time to draw this. I will show them this is not going to solve the problem, because there are some intended consequences and so on. That's the way we use the diagrams and so on. I don't finish this, so, because this is not about security, but it is just to telling you that I will use this in a discussion to look for possible solutions and possible unintended consequences. Okay. So, as I said, to begin with, there were a lot of proposals for archetypes. But then a guy called Weston Holman, he's working in England, and he's actually a consultant, he said, actually, there are only four archetypes. Because we have the intended outcome, that is the action, what you want to achieve, and the unintended result. And the intended outcome can be reinforcing, the unintended result can be balancing. Or the intended outcome could be balancing, and the unintended result could be reinforcing. Or the intended outcome could be reinforcing, and the result reinforcing, the unintended. Or the intended outcome could be balancing, the unintended result could be balancing. Since we have always intended and unintended, we have two feedback loops, and each feedback loop can be reinforcing or balancing, so 2 times 2 gives 4, and I get these 4 possibilities. Wollstoneham called the archetype where the intended outcome should be reinforcing and the unintended result should be balancing under achievement. You will see in a moment why. The one where the intended outcome is balancing and the unintended result is reinforcing, he called it out of control. The one where you have the intended outcome reinforcing and the unintended result reinforcing, he called it relative achievement. And the one where the intended outcome is balancing and the unintended result is balancing, he called it relative control. So, there are only 4 possibilities, because you have 2 loops, feedback loops. One is for the intended outcome, and the other is for the unintended result. 2 times 2, 4 possibilities. But then, he showed also that for each of these 4 possibilities, you could think of a solution that addresses the unintended consequence. So, briefly, if you call these 4 possibilities problem archetypes, then you can create a solution archetype for each of them. So this is just a summarizing. Let's see now in detail as to this. But before that, we start with a completely generic archetype. So consider the intended outcome or the intended consequence feedback loop, which in this case is shown counterclockwise. The action leads to some outcome, and the outcome influences which action you take, and so on. This is the intended consequence feedback loop. But then, typically what happens is that the outcome creates a citizen reaction with some time delay, and this influences the outcome. This here I will come back in a moment, the bundling here. But this is the generic system archetype, problem archetype. I call it generic because I haven't said what kind of action is on the outcome, which kind of polarity it has. So from this alone, we cannot say if this is reinforcing or balancing feedback. And similarly here. So if you forget about whether the arrows have positive or negative polarity, so we get this simplified version here. And then the solution of the archetype is construct the action so that it not only leads to the intended outcome, but it also influences the system reactions to prevent or to diminish the unintended consequence. So we have the intended consequence feedback loop, the unintended, which is the system reaction, and then the solution, which decreases or stops the system reaction to make it as small as possible. So this is the solution archetype. So what do we mean by the boundary here? Well, boundary means if you think of a problem, a system, it includes the organization, there are always some boundaries because there are many reasons that many aspects that require boundaries. For instance, in organizations, you have people with different methods, different disciplines, different knowledge, and because of communication needs or perhaps even separation and where they are, then you have boundaries. Also in enterprises, organizations, and so on, you have sections organized according to different functions. One is financing, another is technical. For instance, here in this college, you have the IT, you have, which is a service, so that the computers and networks can be taken care of, they work okay. You have another one which is the administration, the functional administration. You have another one which is the teachers and so on. You have the library and so on. So all this creates boundaries. There can be boundaries because of accounting, power divisions, different cultures, and so on. There are many things that can contribute to creating boundaries across the organization. And you have boundaries also between the organization and the outside environment. And you can have physical, you can have mental barriers, and so on. All kinds of things. Well, they are there. We cannot pretend they are not there. So therefore, when we are thinking in terms of systems, we have to acknowledge they are barriers, they are boundaries. But on the other hand, because they tend to create difficulties of insights, of understanding of what is across or how things are connected. So we should make these boundaries in a way that it's allowed us to see through them. So they should be kind of transparent rather than completely impenetrable and so on. And when you see here the generated archetype, symbolically speaking, don't give it here another significance. This line here is expressing that the intended and the unintended consequence, in a sense, are separated by a boundary. Typically, the unintended consequence happens because the people who make the decisions and implement the solutions do not see on the other side what might be happening. So, for instance, when the politicians in Mexico decided, okay, we restrict the traffic by requiring that some colors are not allowed on some days, they didn't think further. They didn't think of the people who are using their cars and their needs. So, by enforcing this, people have to find a solution. Okay, how do I come timely enough to my job? The buses come rarely and they are full, and they don't come to my house. I have to go to the bus stop. And they don't drive me to my work. I have still to go from there. So perhaps I don't like this, perhaps that doesn't work. And then how do I take my kids to school? And then how do I do my buying the food and whatever? So all these things, the politicians didn't think of the consequences. They didn't think of what people will do. So they had kind of a mental wall that prevented them to think further and consider, and what happens, how are they going, the people going to react to a prohibition to use, say, red cars on Mondays and green cars on Tuesdays and so on. So we have to be aware that that's typically the case and the reason why unintended consequences are so frequent. If in addition the unintended consequences come very delayed, then you have also a difficulty in connecting what is occurring today with what will occur in the future. Okay, then again the classification of archetypes. Typically, we speak of underachievement because when you have a desired outcome in forms of a reinforcing loop, you are looking for some growth. A reinforcing loop leads to growth. So if you want to establish a company that makes a lot of money, then you want to have as intended outcome a reinforcing situation where you are making better and better and this leads to more success and so on. But if you get as unintended consequence a balancing loop that is acting against, you are not achieving all that you wanted, you are achieving less. That's why Wolstenholme may call this underachievement. Out of control, because when you want as intended outcome a balancing loop, it's because you want to control something. For instance, in the question of the example that I show you earlier this morning, the intended outcome was to control the problems with security. So to increase the security to a balancing loop. The unintended, in the case that I showed this morning, was a reinforcing loop. So actually I draw an archetype without telling you that this is an archetype. And that was an out-of-control archetype. Relative achievement is when the idea of gaining something, increasing something, intended outcome reinforcing, you set another reinforcing outcome that works against as unintended. So it is relative achievement because the intended achievement is gains at the expense of something else. And similarly, relative control, the intended outcome should be balancing, but you have opposing to that an unintended balancing result. So the intended control is gained at the expense of other controls. And these are the four possibilities. Now, we draw that. Here you have underachievement. You have an action that intends to increase the outcome, and the outcomes will lead to even more action, to even more outcome, and so on. That's the intended consequence loop. I will give you some examples in a moment because this is very abstract. Suppose that the situation is that this influences the system, some system reaction. The outcome leads to some changes in the system. And this system reaction works with negative polarity on the outcome, that is, this is reducing the impact on the outcome. Then the unintended consequence loop is a balancing loop that is counteracting your intended growth. Often, the reason why this is that there are some constraints on some resources that you need for the growth. So this is indicated here. And the system boundary is indicating that the decision makers that are intervening to create a reinforcing loop here, they are not aware or are not seeing or see too late the balancing loop that is opposing this. So, this is the problem archetype. The solution archetype is devising the action so that you can diminish the constraint that is kind of like a brake on the system in order to release this effect here, which is a reinforcing loop. So more action, diminishing the constraint, diminishing the constraint diminishes the system reaction, diminishing the system reaction increases the outcome. So you have a reinforcing loop here, which is the solution feedback loop. And this reinforcing loop works against the unintended consequence feedback loop. So it is neutralizing what you don't want to have. Let's see some examples, so make this more specific. You see here, here I mix up the C with an A. I first discover it now, I have to change this. The generic archetype is here again. Action influences the outcome influences the action, reinforcing, and the outcome is a balancing loop with some time delays. Action, outcome, system, reaction, that's completely generic. It doesn't say anything as to what kind of action is and so on. But there are typically two examples that occur. Sorry, why is this under? Yes, okay, yes, yes. I got confused because of this big A here. Semi-generic means we are a little bit more specific. And one example is called the limits to success. Suppose you put some effort to achieve some performance and use that to increase your effort so that you can achieve more performance and so on. Now, assume there are some resource constraints so that this performance leads to some limit in action. And because of that, the performance suffers. That's what we call limit to success. To make it more specific, suppose that the effort is selling some product that your company is producing. And if this goes well, you get orders. These orders generate sales. And because you are in growth, you produce more and sell even more. You get even more orders. That's typical of a company that is having success with a new product. What has happened many times is that this growth actually comes as a surprise for the company. They did underestimate the growth, and they have manufacturing capacity. They are not able to produce everything that the customers want, because in manufacturing there is some lead time, some time it takes to make things, and the system gets clogged because you don't have enough capacity to serve all the orders. So as a consequence of the growth and not having invested enough in production capacity, you get a balancing loop that increases the time to produce things and diminishes then the number of orders because people don't get what they want. So they start, you start getting bad reputation and so on. This has happened many, many, many times. And there are many examples. For instance, you all know Ryanair. This is a very, very successful company. And they are getting tremendous growth and increase. Well, they didn't invent the factors that led to this success. The factors of Ryanair are making sure that the aircraft are full by making the prices low, attractive. It's better to have many people traveling than few people who pay more with the empty service. Getting growth in this way, Ryanair wanted to create growth by offering cheap flights. That was part of it. The other part was reduce cost by making the flights point to point. In this way, you don't need to process the baggage. The people carry on the luggage, it's taking and get the luggage off again. So if you, with Ryanair, if you want to fly, say, from Norway to Biarritz, from Oslo to Biarritz in southern France, there is no direct flight, but you can book to London and from London to Biarritz. But then you have to collect your luggage in London, you have to check it in again, and then you get it in Biarritz. This decreases costs for Ryanair, and many people do that. The other thing is that Ryanair selected airports that were cheap. So in Norway, for instance, they don't utilize Gardermoen because Gardermoen is expensive. They use rather Torp, south of Oslo, which they also call Oslo, even if it is 100 kilometers south of Oslo, and so on. All these things, it was not Ryanair who invented this. It was an American company in the 80s that launched this idea. At that time, flying was very expensive, and you had Pan Am and many other companies. They were flying with half-full airplanes, but people pay a lot, but they didn't get a really growth. And then a company was formed that was called People's Express. And they created such a reinforcing loop. They started getting more and more orders so they could sell more tickets and fly and so on. But what happened is they had underestimated the degree of success of this idea. And suddenly they discovered that there were many more orders and people who wanted to fly with them than they were able to serve. And then they tried to address this in many ways. But they didn't have enough staff, they didn't have enough aircraft and so on. So they have a resource constraint here that acted a feedback, balancing feedback loop that led to people getting disillusioned because they didn't get the tickets or because the flights get late because they didn't have enough aircraft. So they got this problem here. So how should they have planned? They should have understood that this reinforcing loop will lead to increase. And in order to deal with that increase, they will have to have an increase in the capacity of service. Here, this is for manufacturing, so here we have manufacturing capacity. But in the case of People's Express, was service capacity. And they should have invested in recruiting new people, they should have invested in getting more aircraft to go with growth. So all these things they forgot, and as a consequence what happened is that People Express had a tremendous growth, an increase for a couple of years, and then it went bankrupt. It went bankrupt because they got bad reputation, and also they started losing customers at the same time where they tried desperately to increase by buying new aircraft and engaging more staff. But this came too late, so they had a lot of expenses. They have ordered a lot of aircraft, they had engaged a lot of people, they had lost costs at the same time where their reputation hit a low because they hadn't hadn't been able to sustain the growth, and at the same time the competitors starting reacting against. So they understood they had also to lower prices to attract more passengers and so on, offer better service. So the combination of all these things lead to this. But there is an archetype which is the growth and underinvestment archetype that depicts this very well. Another example, which is also an underachieving archetype, is the so-called tragedy of the commons, where you have some activity that leads to some reward, and they lead more of this activity, but the consequence of this is that you are overusing a resource, and in the end the reward becomes less and less and less. An example of this is, for instance, if you have a natural park, more people come, they have pressure from coming there, say skiing or whatever, but then there can be damage to the environment, and this decreases the pleasure. Okay, so the solution to this will be, at the same time with you are getting more and more visitors, more customers, you should have to expand the area so that this damage doesn't occur. So this is the underachievement archetype. Questions to this? Later we will use that for security. First I want to illustrate this with examples that are relatively easy to understand. Some questions? Please. You understand the mechanism. Okay? Now as to the out-of-control archetype. The out-of-control, you impose some control action to diminish the problem you need to control. And because this goes over time, you have to do that continuously. So the bigger the problem you need to control, the more you have to implement an action. And the more the action is implemented, the less the problem becomes. So this is a typically balancing loop, which is the intended consequence balancing loop. Often the control action has a negative impact, increasing some system reaction that you don't want. This system reaction over time will increase the problem in need of control. So you get this as a reinforcing loop, unintended one, that goes against the intended control action. And because of some boundaries and so, the decision makers don't see this immediately. In the case of the People Express, the reason why the people didn't see that was basically that they didn't work through the consequences. It was more like a mental boundary. They didn't analyze the problem in detail, so they didn't think of the consequences here. But the boundaries can be physical, there can be many reasons for that. The solution to an out-of-control archetype is in linking the problem you need to control so that you make some action, some intervention, so that this diminishes the system reaction. This is very generic because we speak about actions and problems and system reactions. More specific, again you have the generic, semi-generic, more specific, and then the solution. So this is completely generic. This is the same diagram here to the left that we had in the previous slide. Semi-generic, we have two examples, one that was known by Fix That Fails, and another one that was known by Shift in the Burning. Fix That Fails. You implement some fix to reduce the problem. This is the balancing loop. But the fix it itself increases the problem in some way. So you get a reinforcing loop against. For instance, dealing with criminality. Suppose the politicians say, oh, we are having too many acts, criminal acts. We have to get more police. The more police will reduce crime. The more crime, the more police we need, but more police will reduce crime. So this is the balancing loop. The unintended consequence is you are getting the perpetrators, the people who commit the offenses, but then you have to process them. And if you don't think about this, you're going to have an overcrowding of the courts where they have to be treated and condemned, and the people get to prisons and they get overfilled. So as a consequence, unintended consequence of dealing the problem by increasing the police is that you are getting problems with processing the prisoners that you have. And this is going to clog the system. So how should you think? Well, yes, increase the police,